7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 69 of Color Matic. I am your host, Daquan Watson. And as always, right here by my side, well, kind of long distance, I have my buddy Brian Allen. How's it going, dude?
Yeah, they'll be putting stuff out there, like side by side, getting into troubles.
People complaining about us not having COVID protocols or whatever, you know? But yeah, so this week, there's a lot going on. Obviously, we have Black History Month started this month. So, you know, people had to share stuff with me and you, and we saw a lot of stuff already. So there's going to be a bunch of stuff to talk about this week for sure. Before we get into that, though, I want to tell everybody, if you'd like to support the show, check out patreon.com/colorofmagic, where, you know, for just $2 a month, you can help support the show. And we send you a nice postcard, handwritten at the bare minimum. And here's another cool thing. We just got our first round of playmats done. Brian hadn't even seen them yet. I just got them, and I think I showed them off in a stream when I unboxed them because I was kind of surprised they were in there. So we'll be sending those. I only got four. These are my first four samples. I'll be sending those to our upper reward level folks. And then when I get my next wave in, we will send them to any remainders, and what's available, we will put up, probably just make it for sale to people. We'll post up somewhere on social media if people are interested in buying them. So if you follow us on social, follow us over on Twitter at Color Magic. We will make sure people have the opportunity to pick one up if you would like one. I probably expect that in about another like 3 weeks or so. And also tokens, those are in the works. Those will also go to our highest Patreon levels, and those will be made available to everybody as well. We should have those hopefully by the end of the month. So we have a lot of stuff moving and grooving here in the early part of the year. And we want to say thank you to a new patron, Jacob Jardel. So welcome to the crew, Jacob. Thank you so much. And we have a sponsor. I have so many things going on, but we do have a sponsor for the show, Cardsphere.com. You've probably heard us talk about them a lot if you're a regular. If you're new and you don't know, you should go check them out. They're a great way to buy and sell cards at what you want to pay and what you want to sell them for. And you can do it all with just PayPal in your account. It's super awesome, super easy. Takes a little bit, maybe about 10 to 15 minutes to just figure out the UI and where you should be putting stuff or whatever. But once you got that down, it's good to go. They're great supporters of the show. They support many other content creators that put up really positive stuff in the community. So go give them a look. Matter of fact, I just got some cards in yesterday that I had on a deal from Cardsphere, which I was pretty happy about. So yeah, been a good week doing business on there. But again, if you haven't checked them out, it is cardsphere.com. All right, so we have a lot of stuff to cover this week. And you know, with everything going on, we're definitely going to have to step up on the soapbox for just a second. Just a second. And yeah, here's the thing, though. This one isn't even Black History Month related. This goes back to last week when we were doing the Streamer Early Access event. And I started a little fuss on social media with a few people, and that's fine. You know, not the first or the last time that's going to happen. But there were people who decided they wanted to play this silly Tybalt's Trickery deck, right? And I don't have a problem totally with it, right? They make the cards available. You're trying to do some stuff, show off some things for your viewers. Do your thing. But if you're just going to hop into people's streams, and every single time it fails on turn two, you're just going to scoop and move on, that's just creating a negative experience. And I get it. People say, well, what'd you want to do? Just sit around and play a couple? Like, you know what? Be a professional. If you play the deck and you fail, then talk through at least two or three turns worth about, hey, well, we can still draw this other thing. Or maybe, hey, if we draw back-to-back cards, we can still pull out of this or whatever, right? Make it exciting for your streamer. Like, learn how to be a damn streamer and communicator. Because the other side of this, that's the unprofessional side, is you're now putting the onus on the other streamer to do extra work because now you're killing the vibe of everything. Their stream's upset or complaining or talking about things being stupid. So now you've created some negativity that they have to deal with and manage between them, their moderators, whoever. Right? You have to be aware that there's more you're doing here. Plus, you're trying to make a showcase of the set. We're not playing for win. Like, if we're in ladder or if you're playing a tournament, great. I have zero problems with that behavior. Matter of fact, I prefer it. But for something like this, you're showcasing the set. Like, there were times when I was playing where even when I already could win or didn't or whatever, I let my opponent's deck do a couple of extra things because wins and losses don't matter. I'm like, hey, it looks like they're doing a cool thing. Let me give them like two more turns to see what this card does for them or whatever. Just because it's fun to watch, right? Part of the entertainment is still your crowd getting to watch the other person's deck do a cool thing. But you're conceding on turn two, so you don't even have any idea what they're doing. So you'll be, I'll tell you straight up, like, and I wasn't the only one it happened to. It happened a couple of times to me. Three or four other people reached out to me, said it happened to them as well. So I'm sure it happened to more people. And they weren't even the same people. So there were multiple folks doing this. So figure how many times that happened, how many negative experiences that is. And it just makes for just a weird blemish on the day that doesn't need to exist. Like, be professional, people. Understand why you're there. And I will even go as far as to say, the people that I was able to identify that were doing it, this is probably why you're not going to grow as streamers, because you haven't figured out the professional side yet. Like, be mad if you want to be mad, but I'm just being real. Like, the people who get it, get it. The people that don't are going to struggle.
Is the deck that fragile, or literally if they don't have the combo on turn two, they can't win?
Theoretically, like I said, you can draw out of it, right? You can maybe draw another copy of the trickery and another spell you can counter or whatever. Still do it. Depending on what version you were playing, there's a chance you could just end up straight up casting a card or two and get out of trouble. But they weren't even giving themselves an opportunity to. They would just be like, all right, cool. Well, I tried on turn two. It didn't happen. Games over. Or they'd cast it and then they'd hit another trickery or hit another one of their zero cost things. And then they're just dead, right? And it's like, that's not fun for anybody. It's not fun for your viewers. It's not fun for your opposing streamer. It's not fun for their community. So why not at least play it up? I mean, even if when I had games where I just like got stuck at two or three lands, like, you know what? Let's still play it out another three or four turns. Let the opponent get to some level of inevitability. Then I'll concede, right? At least let them show us they have lethal damage, or at least three or four creatures that have put me down to like two and I have no way to come back or something, right? At least let something happen and progress so we get to see some cards in action. And okay, let's also say, like, they were having some server issues and whatever. So if you were in the trenches, you kind of knew some of the issues that were going on behind the scenes. So if you knew there was also problems and occasionally there was going to be problematic load times or whatever, well, now you're also putting that other streamer in a situation where, okay, you know, they might end up with a 2 minute load time while whatever's happening is happening. Then they're going to load up, play you. Game was over in like a minute. Okay, now they're going to have to go wait in lobby again or whatever. It's just like, why? Why are you doing that? Like, be aware of the situation and what's going on. And for sure, we reported every one of them. Every username. I even went back through my streams. So I don't know what's going to happen. But yeah, if people want to be mad about that, be mad about it. But there's professionalism that was lost on a promotional event. That's why it bothered me. Like, my group is pretty good, and I can manage my stream mostly okay, but still was just unnecessary. And it's just a letdown. Like, nothing good comes from that in a promotional event. Okay. I'm done. I'll get off it. That's the last thing I'm going to say about it. I already said my piece on social, but we'll move along. But Brian, what did you learn last week?
This is a real treat for, you know, kids of the 80s like us, or just anybody really that loves good cartoons. The real Ghostbusters cartoon from the 80s is apparently going to be on YouTube. It's not a YouTube red thing. It's apparently going to be totally free. So, you know, everybody that saw the cartoon as a kid, I'm sure, is already hyped about this if they don't already own it on DVD, because there were about a million cartoons in the 80s that tried to sell us some kind of toy, some kind of TV show, some kind of movie. There were maybe two or three that were actually any good, and the real Ghostbusters is one of them.
You ain't lying.
Better than Ghostbusters too, truthfully.
I tried to explain this to somebody the other day, because they were getting mad that, like, well, all the company's trying to do is get you to buy X. And I'm like, when did you grow up? Because I'll be damned if every time I watch G.I. Joe or He-Man or whatever, and there was a new character, that damn son of a... that thing was in Walmart, in every toy store, Toys R Us, whatever, the next week. Right. That was not accidental. Like, if you saw the new Cyclops dude, or you saw whatever, a new vehicle in something, new Transformer, within 2 weeks, you were going to be able to buy that thing in the store.
Transformers did a whole movie where they killed off all your favorite Transformers to sell you more toys. Sending 12-year-old kids screaming from the theater because they murdered Optimus Prime.
But you know what they did? They made that badass Rodimus Prime to sell. That's what they did. So
I've never forgiven Rodimus. I don't care how cool his toy looked. He's a murderer.
But for real, I mean, I think people don't realize that. Like, that's marketing. And it worked. It's fantastic. And they still do it.
Yeah.
They still do it.
You know, Pokemon?
I would say almost every, not every toy. I would say a lot of the toys I see in the store, even without me being fans or even having kids, I recognize them from even when I've just switched channels or seen a commercial.
Yeah.
So they're still doing it. So to be mad that a company's doing a promo to try to sell you something, like at least they're being direct about it. They're not disguising it as some like cutesy show or cartoon that happens to have a thing you can go buy because you're a fan, you know?
And again, it was a really great cartoon. I remember there's an episode where they tried to catch the ghost of Harry Houdini and he kept escaping from the trap. I mean, that's brilliant stuff, especially for what's supposed to be a quote unquote kids show.
That's true. That's very true. And you're right. The show was very good. I mean, I had no complaints about that. So that's kind of
sweet. They tried to catch the boogeyman one time. That was awesome.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Air Buddy. I don't know if it was the same, you know, for I know at my house, everybody said, hey, the boogeyman going to get you. Who is the boogeyman? Well, you don't even need to worry about it. But yeah, just boogeyman, hey, y'all.
It was a better version of the boogeyman than what we got in WWE, let me tell you.
Yes, it was. He's a legend, though, according to their merchandising.
He kind of is. Nobody's going to forget that guy.
True.
But yeah, I think that's a good call out, man. I think people who haven't seen it, definitely go check. Look for the release date on that. Go check that out on YouTube. I think you'll enjoy it. What I learned in the last week, actually what I learned, I guess technically it was this week, was, okay, well, we mentioned at the top of the show, we started Black History Month. So, you know, there's going to be companies doing their stuff to try to show their support for the Black community. Apple decided to get in on it, and they made, I can't call it hideous, but it's definitely not a nice looking.
I've seen it. You absolutely can't call it hideous.
It's not a nice looking Apple Watch. And I don't even know, like, that's one of those ones where I look at and just go, you know, I'd rather you didn't. Like, and immediately I was like, you know what? You could have just made a simple one that just has, like, Black Lives Matter on the band. You could have made a thing, a special one that maybe has a rotating screen with pictures of MLK, Harriet Tubman, you know, whoever you want to put in there, right? Just three or four icons. Awesome. Would have been totally reasonable. But what they ended up going with is this, I don't even know the color. I wanted to say like African color, but it's not because it's just like red and green. Yeah, I don't even think it even has yellow or anything in it or black. It's weird. It's not like the stripes don't even connect. Like, I don't know what they were aiming for. And nobody I know so far has been like, oh, that's dope. Like, everybody's been like, eh. Like, yeah. they're either lukewarm or think it's terrible. Like, and at some point, I just look and just say, like, at what point did you sit in a room and be like, okay, we need to do a thing for Black History Month? Everybody's like, all right, sounds good. Bring me your ideas in a couple of weeks. You have the meeting. You go through the different samples and you're like, nah. And then, oh, this is the one. Like, was there not anybody in the room that sanity checked that?
That's frightening part is think about the 30 designs probably got turned down. Imagine how bad that
was. That's exactly my thought. Like, what else didn't make it?
Because you know that wasn't idea number one. They had a bunch of focus groups. They did a lot of spent, probably billions, and that's what they came up with.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, what happened? How did we end up here? That's what I want to know.
Sorry, I want to know if any actual Black people were involved in design, and if so, were they comfortable, you know, and watch it's going to be like some famous, you know, Black clothing designer, I'm going to feel terrible, but I don't like the design either.
Well, to be honest, I think a lot of high fashion is just kind of weird anyway, so
that
would make perfect sense for me. Wouldn't change my opinion at all. But I will say this, right? As much as I'm knocking the watch, at least Apple's trying to do something.
True.
I mean, now, admittedly, they did put it out and it's a thing they're going to make money on and whatever, fine. Like,
they may not, but they're going to try to make money.
That's true. They're going to try to make money on it. Right. So I get it. Some people are going to do it and it's fine. You know, this is a thing we can talk about later in the show, too. But I just found the watch. I thought it was hilarious. I think somebody had shown it to me on Twitter, at least gave me the link. But feel free to look it up. Just look up Black History Month Apple Watch, and I think you'll find it. But it's not the best looking. It's not their best work.
Love that Apple decided they're going to try to make watches cool again. That's still the thing that blows my mind. Because I remember when I was teaching defensive driving, I would have a watch just to check, like, is it when it's time for a break or whatever. And one day I forgot my watch. I went in the nearest dollar store because I figured they'd have a watch. I asked if they sold watches. They looked at me like I had dropped in from the 1800s. Like, no, boomer. We don't sell watches.
Dude, I'll tell you this, though. Like, wearing a watch sometimes still feels nice. Like, I've got three or four, and I have one that I won that's like a prize watch that I got from the Hunter Burton Memorial. Like, I have
that. I would understand.
But I don't know. I think watches are still nice. Now, granted, I don't think you need to have, like, super gaudy big watch, but I think watches are just nice. There's something convenient about not having to pull my phone out or whatever and just like, okay, cool, it's 3 o'clock, and then going about my business, you know?
I'm going to just put my phone on a chain and hang it around my neck.
I'm sure somebody has that accessory somewhere. Okay, so talking about Black History Month, kind of sticking with the theme here, there's a company called Renegade Studios, which... I know several people from there. They used to work at, a lot of them used to work for different game companies in the industry. And generally pretty good people, honestly. So I'm not saying this to knock them. I actually like a lot of the people at their studio. They're good about communicating stuff. They're generally pretty supportive about things in the game industry. Now, like I said, generally just a fairly good company, which is kind of what makes this thing I'm about to mention kind of questionable. But they have a game called The World's Fair. Which, you know, if you don't know anything about the World's Fair, it used to be this big event. People would come from literally all over the world and they show off new inventions, new electrical stuff. It was just a big to-do. You know, and they had a board game they made, and I can't remember how old it is. It's a few years old now, though, because I do remember seeing it for a while. And it was a modest seller. Most stores didn't, or at least most retail stores, didn't sell a ton of it. You know, they sold a couple copies. It's rated decently. You know, it's not gangbusters or anything. But they decided they were going to do a reprinted special, I guess, not even reprinted, a special edition. Which, in and of itself, isn't bad. Because you're like, okay, you're going to do something updated for the game. A lot of different games do that. So far, so good. But this version has, I believe it's, let me go find the exact number. Because I believe it was five or six black creators and inventors included. Because you get these characters that players can represent and things like that in the game. And even that, you're kind of like, okay, right? That's not so bad. But then you find out it's an Amazon exclusive. And then that kind of rubbed a lot of game stores the wrong way. And there's, on private channels, there's been a lot of hubbub over this. And I kind of get it. And here's how, okay, first off, let me explain some things that people don't know. How kind of exclusive editions of things even happen sometimes. Like, it's not about the company just outright saying, hey, we're only going to make this for this company. What happens a lot of time is that the company wants to produce a new version or do a thing, and, you know, Target, Walmart, Amazon, whoever comes along and says, hey, we want to carry your thing, but we want something that's special for us or whatever. So the way it works out is usually, my understanding is those companies will at least front a large portion of the money or pay a large percentage of the print run up front to make it easier for the company to produce it. So they don't have to wait to produce it, then sell through to distribution or anything else. Which for the company is great, right? You basically get to print a thing with very low risk, which is very good. And then your name is out there sitting on the shelves or online on these big stores. So seems awesome. Makes a lot of sense. The problem, though, is even the store, and this also sometimes happens, like in the case of World's Fair, where they say, all right, well, we saw the sell-through through the normal LGS distribution chain and through the local hobby stores, that it wasn't great. So if there's a new edition, we're fine working with Amazon or whoever just do an exclusive version and put it out there. And to their credit, they thought they were doing something good, saying, hey, we're going to make this POC version that has these characters that you can't get anywhere else. Awesome. The problem, though, is that several stores immediately said, well, if we had this edition, we could sell more.
Right.
Because one of the problems we always run into in the game industry is people saying, like, we don't have enough board games that have representation. Like, there's no diversity there. Like, we've talked about it before, where you have a lot of board games that don't have any people of color on the covers.
Or if they do, you know, the people are the natives that get colonized in the first 10 years of whatever game you're playing.
That's true. And you also have the issue of, like, when you go to play the game, like, sometimes there's no representation among the avatars in the game, right? That's a problem. So here you are making a thing that specifically has that, and in a very positive way. That it's like, hey, we're showing off people that are known inventors, creators, whatever, that were part of the World's Fair and whatever. And like, okay, cool. So you're educating people. This is awesome, right? Nothing to complain about here at all. And most stores aren't going to be able to get it. And it's a tough situation because I get what Renegade was doing. And I don't think generally that they are wrong. The problem, though, is that it's apples and oranges, right? Like, this is an addition that you added a very prominent feature for people during Black History Month, right? Like, so if there was a time retail stores could sell it, or they were trying to be supportive or want to make a Black History Month display and highlight games that have any form of diversity or any representation for the Black community or whatever, that would be the time you could sell them. And they're just not going to be available. So it's tough. And I think it's even cool. Like, I kind of even want to buy one.
They're not like, do want to buy one.
Yeah, they're not crazy priced or anything. So it's like, cool, I should pick one up. I don't have a copy of the original game, so that makes it even more likely. But, I mean, it's cool to even be like, dude, you can get a game that has, like, Frederick Douglass, you know, and Ida Wells. Like, that's kind of cool. But I have to buy this other edition if I want to get one of these, like, six or seven characters or whatever. You know, it's just like, it puts me in a weird spot as a buyer. Yeah. Like, because I want to support the effort and the thing and say, hey, this matters, right? So I want to buy it and show people, like, hey, your sales were good because people believe this is a thing that should exist and I want to have it.
Yeah, because we definitely want to do it again.
Yeah, but the other half of that is, like, I also would like for you to just make this readily available in the hobby game stores where people are buying a lot of stuff and where people are demoing things and where it can be shown off. Now, granted, admittedly, we're in the time of COVID and all that. I get it. I understand that's a real discussion to be had. But we're not going to be in COVID forever.
Yeah, you sure? Can I quote you?
I'm sure. Like, it'll still be around, but obviously we'll be back to doing some level of normal things at some point. And having this available and having it where it can be seen is important. You know, one of the things we talk about is, like, the representation is good, but you need it to be seen and be present. Right? Do everything you can to not just tell people they are welcome at the table. Do everything you can to invite them to the table. Right? And this feels like, okay, you said, yeah, we want to do this thing, but only because we're doing it this way. And it just feels kind of, I know that's not the message, but it looks really bad and feels bad to a lot of people in the game industry right now. So that one kind of hurts a little, but I don't know. I may still buy a copy. I don't know. I got to think about it.
Yeah.
I want one, though. I do. I think it's very cool because I can't think of a game or any type of game like this. Because, you know, there's like Tesla versus Edison or whatever. And there's always that type of stuff, but you don't really have this level of representation in these sort of games. So
definitely not. So I'm like you, I definitely want it. I love, you know, historical type games. So it's something I'll end, even after ranting about it, I'm going to end up with a copy of it because I want.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think I still have to get one. It just feels not as good as it should feel buying it. I would love to just go to my local store, tell them, hey, can you order me a copy? I'll pick it up in a couple days and then just scoop it up, right? I would much rather do that than just give more money to Amazon for no reason. But
how many board games that come out this year will have Frederick Douglass? This is probably the only one.
I feel reasonably confident in saying that's probably the only one. Yeah, I'd put the over under at one, like maybe 1.5. You might get lucky that because this happens, somebody else will make a change for something that comes out in like October, November, right? But that's about it. I mean, it's pretty tough. So anyway, it's just something. I mean, if you do want a game that does have some extra representation, it is one to know about. It's called The World's Fair 1893. You can pick it up on Amazon. I believe it's on pre-order right now and releases February 26th. So
this brings me to a thing I was thinking about regarding Black history and board games. And if there is one and I haven't seen it, and I don't know why there isn't, still, there should be some kind of board game, you know, where you're like about the Underground Railroad. How has that not happened?
I actually thought about this a while back, and I don't think I think it would sell to us, but not to your average board gamer.
Because I think if you do it right, it's a very compelling experience, and I would hope enough people from different cultures to pick it up. Because I've talked about some of the games where I play some games and where you basically end up colonizing the locals, which is a problematic theme, but just because the game itself is fun, I know other people will play it. So surely a few white people would purchase an Underground Railroad game.
I mean. I think there is one actually.
Okay.
But I think it's older. Yeah, it's called Freedom.
Okay. I definitely will look that up.
A place called Academy Games. Because it's funny, because as you were talking about it, I was like, wait, I swear I've heard of that before. Maybe it does exist.
I felt like there almost had to be.
It's from 2012.
I never played one. Okay.
Yeah. So it's not new, but it also didn't get a lot of notoriety. It's a four-player game.
That may be why nobody else did it.
Yeah, it's a four-player game. They're saying it takes about an hour and a half to play, so it's reasonable. Okay. It did get a few awards in 2013 and 2014, which is kind of cool. But
I'm looking at it now. Yeah, it's definitely one I want to buy.
Yeah, so it's still out there. You can go pick it up.
Definitely. I would love to play that with my kids, because that's something. Games, are a lot. Games, movies, and good books are obviously a huge way to teach as opposed to just lecturing.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, right? You're talking about, though, even those themes created a game that, even being award-winning and stuff, isn't like a highly played, highly sought-after, talked-about game.
Yeah, how is this not a games and education type thing for schools? I literally never heard about this.
Yeah, but that's my point though, right? Like it's funny because even I knew about it, and it didn't even trigger for.
Yeah, it took a second for you to remember.
Yeah, so that's one of those things, right? It's just like it's around, people know about it, people have reviewed it, but it just didn't get that excitement or play around it. And I think it's the theme. I think people, because again, for as much as people, and this sucks to say this, but I think for as much as people want to support things, when it comes to trying to understand it or give that full representation, people have trouble with it. I think it's the same way that people say like, hey, yeah, no, I support the gay community and this, that, and the other. But then when it comes to like, this movie or this TV show has like two gay characters as the leads, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like I didn't really relate to it that much, so I didn't watch it. Yeah, that's kind of the same thing here. I'd almost venture to guess a lot of people went, it's really about black people. I don't know if I even feel comfortable playing this or whatever. And then they just don't.
And if you're getting something with your board game group in mind, and you know there's a couple people that aren't going to play it, that's going to make you less likely to buy it. Although I see here that apparently it does have a solo mode, so if you just want to try it out for yourself.
Yeah. There you go, though. Extra education for people. You can go check it out. So another thing I want to touch on real quick is because I've gotten a few messages through social media, so I just kind of want to address it here. A few people have asked, like, hey, I saw your video. Because I did put up some videos telling people over the last week about, one, why you should consider, if you're going to stream and you're starting out now, streaming on Facebook or on YouTube. and actually not Twitch. I have a video. Feel free to go to my YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/PowerDragon. PowerDragn. But the real premise, I mean, there's a few reasons I talk about, but the biggest is that Twitch has 90%. If you add up the three platforms, 90% of all the hours that were streamed by creators were done on Twitch. Which is a gigantic number. When you're talking about a percentage of a field, that's absurd. But the other side of that is they only have 65 to 66% of the hours viewed between all those different platforms. And when you look at that, that means that on the other platforms, there are more hours viewed per hour streamed. I mean, that's it. I mean, and it's like 3.5 to 1 to 4 to 1. You know, when you're looking at like 92 to 95 hours per on Facebook, and I believe it's like 110 or 111 per on YouTube. And there's a bunch of other stuff that goes with that as far as like recommendations and whatnot. Hell, I believe the stat I saw most recently is on YouTube. If you want to look at the numbers of the things that of the minutes or the hours viewed, 70% came from recommendations. So that means very few people are destination viewing on YouTube. Same thing on Facebook. They're going and looking at a thing, but then going, oh, well, let me see this other video that's kind of similar, or some this other project this creator did, or whatever. And then you start down the rabbit hole and watch 3-4 videos, right? You don't get that on Twitch. You're literally destination shopping. Hell, your VODs can't even be seen whenever you're done if somebody wanted to look for them, unless they're specifically going to your page to get caught up. So to that end, like we talked about last week with the Facebook Black Gaming Creator Program, I started streaming on Facebook. Today was my third day, actually, that I'm getting on every morning and streaming on there. And I have to admit, it's kind of nice. I mean, the community's been coming through. The people that have been stopping in have been pretty friendly. And I'll say this. One thing that I think stands out that I hadn't considered until this week when I've been on there is people are less likely to be asses when they're using an actual ID'd account.
This is true.
I mean, seriously, I thought about it, right? On Facebook, or I mean, on YouTube, you just make up a name, right? Nobody knows who you are. Nobody connects it to you. A bunch of those people are literally, it might just be a blow-off account. They made a stupid, like, Gmail account just to sign up with. Same thing on Twitch. People have, like, weird IDs that you'll never know who they are unless you know who they are. But on Facebook, it's like, you don't want your grandmama seeing you being an ass to somebody.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a real thing. And so far, I have to admit, like, the support when you've sent a ticket or something has been pretty responsive, which, you know, I talked about last week or week before, where not only did I send a thing to Twitch, we tagged them twice on Twitter and didn't get a response to both of their accounts, to main Twitch, Twitch and Twitch support. So, I don't know. I'm not saying it's like the perfect utopia or anything like that. I'm just saying if you're starting to stream, really consider looking at Facebook and YouTube first before looking at Twitch.
Do you know if Twitch maybe if it's different for partners, or is this, I'm hoping, you know, somebody like Ninja didn't have to wait 3 weeks for a response, but I don't know.
Partners get like a special assigned account or whatever.
Oh, they get,
that's a different thing from what I understand. They have a group of people that's just for dealing with partners. Now, they do have the same thing over in Facebook, but even just the generic response has been pretty quick. So, I don't know. I'm just saying, it's a thing I hadn't put a ton of time into. I had set up some pages there just kind of like in case I want it in the future. I already locked it down, but I don't know. I mean, real talk, it's worth considering. Same thing over on YouTube, because again, I've already had people come like my pages and subscribe to my YouTube channel and whatever, because they're watching old videos and things that just can't happen on Twitch. The difference is, like, if you have a network or you're already a named person or whatever, then yes, Twitch is where you want to be. There's a bunch of bodies there. There are people who will raid you or whatever because they're fans and whatnot. Like, you will get your people.
And Facebook still may want to come talk to you. So you might as well.
Yeah. But the thing, even for me, is like, well, we have the podcast, right? And I use that to send people over, and I have a YouTube channel. So I use that to send people over. So I'm building kind of my own ecosystem. So I don't need as much leverage from Twitch. It helps, but I don't necessarily need it all the time. But if you're brand new, well, you know how it is, man. Like, if you don't have that network yet, like, you might just be struggling for 9 months, 12 months before you even get 5 viewers. And it's tough. But almost everybody knows that's... Now, I will say, nothing's going to magically happen on any platform. So I'm not saying you're just going to log in, start streaming, and there's going to be 50 people. Like, you're still going to have to build it up. But the difference is, they're sharing your stuff, and the algorithm's putting it in front of other people and whatever. So if you're doing a decent job, you can at least get some momentum. I don't know if that's the case for everybody on Twitch right now. Now, I do think there is a world that, let's say we get 6 to 9 months down the road and, you know, utopia, we'll say at least like 50 to 70% of people are starting to get vaccinated and some stores start opening up and people start going back to work. You're going to have fewer people streaming as well. So if you're thinking about it, now's probably the time anyway, so you can establish yourself and kind of get in the trenches. So as when people start leaving, you're one of the people they can come to. So I don't know, just the way I'm seeing it, I'm kind of guessing on some predictive things here, but you know, nobody knows the future. But yeah, Facebook has not been that bad, actually. I am actually surprised. I don't know if I'll say impressed yet, but definitely surprised. So something to think about. Now, let's talk about something a little juicier. We had that Kaldheim trailer finally drop last week. What was your impression, Brian?
It was pretty meh.
Okay. I'm glad I wasn't the only one, because I was going to feel really bad if you were like, it was sweet. And I'd be like, oh, man, we're on opposite sides of this thing.
And sometimes we are, but not this time.
See, and this is exactly what I was afraid of, right? When we started talking about metal this and metal that, and we're getting all these bands to come in and preview cards, and we're doing this, you know, big fake ship with the rock band during the preview thing. And I'm like, man, if the trailer isn't just like banging headbanger music, lots of dudes in armor, you know, maybe some gods, some Celtic stuff, whatever, like, it's just not going to deliver. And we got none of that.
And just, again, comparison to the previous few trailers. Now, I'll admit, the last one for, God, why am I drawing a blank on the set that came before? But the Syndicate? One with Nahiri. Yeah. That one didn't just totally blow me away either. I think the best one I've seen in a while is the Throne of Eldraine. The Throne of Eldraine was just really like, okay, that is incredible. I would go see this movie if they made it.
You know. But here's my problem, though, right? Like, and I agree with you. I would watch the movie for a couple of those trailers. But my problem is that, let's say we go back to War of the Spark, right? You watch it, you're like, okay, there's these planeswalker, these people, even if you don't know about magic, like, there's these people obviously trying to go after the big dragon dude. He's trying to kill some people. One of them saves the other one. She's making a zombie army to go after the dude, right? Like, you get it. There's a whole story. You understand it. You get thrown a Eldraine. You're like, okay, cool. There's this big Garrick weird dude. There's some gingerbread people. It's obviously like a fantasy land sort of thing. Boom, you're getting it, right? Even if we talk about Ikoria, right? You have the big monsters coming back, and then you have Vivian trying to take down the monsters, and you got some cool, like, you know, 80s kind of rock music in the back or whatever. Cool. But then the problem for me with Kaldheim is, it didn't feel like it told me anything about the set. There's one dude in the video who looks kind of like a Celtic type warrior. And then there's Kaya, there's Tybalt. He's creating some type of rift and calling monsters through it. And Kaya's mad about it. That's pretty much the trailer. Like, as a Magic player, I looked at that and went, I don't even know what Tybalt's doing. Like, why is he trying to get the monsters out? Like, where is he taking them? And
or why Kaya's here.
Yeah, and like, why is Kaya stopping the other dude? Like, shouldn't she be calling more warriors to fight the monsters instead of sending the dude away to warn the other one? Like, I don't even know what's happening.
And especially like, after they talked about, you know, like, hey, you know, we're not going to show some of this stuff in some countries. Okay, we're waiting for some, you know, we're waiting for something that pushes some boundaries.
Yeah, I was thinking there was just going to be like some crazy fight scenes or the gods trying to take some people or, I don't know, Toralf ripping somebody apart or some, I don't know, like, but something to fit the discretionary clause along with the whole like, up tempo, over the top metal theme,
which is Chandra, Nyssa, something,
anything. You know? Like, here's the thing: I actually like Kaldheim. So like, let me start there. So far, the set has been very fun to play with. I think the power level is kind of where you want it to be.
And that's the first time we've been able to say that in like good ages. 2 years. Seems like
like flavor of the set seems good. Like it's checking a lot of boxes. So I don't want it to sound like I'm just bashing Kaldheim. Like, this is literally just about the trailer itself. I actually like the teaser trailer thing more than I like the actual trailer. Because at least then you got, like, flashes of different, like, armored things or whatever. And you kind of had, like, the slow building kind of, like, bass guitar sort of tone in the music. And then you had the weird, like, maybe it's Tybalt, maybe it's not kind of reveal going on. And it was kind of cool and enticing. Like, I didn't feel like I got anything out of this Kaldheim trailer. It was just such a weird... Like, I watched it, and then I sort of felt like I was waiting for the next thing.
Yeah. Like, did I miss something? Even though I was staring right at it, did something... Was something skipped somewhere?
Yeah, like if there would have been, I don't know, like 8 to 10 seconds more, where you see the monsters go through whatever this rift is that Tybalt's building... And then maybe you see where the monsters are going, or maybe like you see a couple of the gods trying to fend off the monsters coming in or whatever. I don't know where they're going, but like something more there. I think you could have sold me.
Some dialogue. So, hey, you ready to edge anything?
Yeah. Like I would have been set if you'd have just, even if you'd have done a crescendo to like, all right, now that the monsters came through, now you get the metal music and the battle starting to happen. And then boom, check out Kaldheim. Right, like, I could have been sold on that. But like, as it is, I'm kind of like, it felt very subdued. When you're going to say, like, for weeks, we were being pushed like, metal, 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 right? We got the cool metal scrawl logo, you know, all this stuff going on, and then like, just nothing in the trailer.
I don't even need metal. Just tell me, you know, kind of like, why are these people fighting? You know, what's happening here?
Sure. That would be good too. I still don't know what's happening.
Like, what's the plan? At least, you know, with Nahiri, in the previous period, you're like, okay, she's, you know, she's amassing power to do something. She doesn't want to get pushed around. She's, you know, she's crossing some lines, killing her friends. Okay.
Yeah. I could get with that, right?
If you didn't know who these people were before you saw the trailer, you certainly don't know anything about them after.
Yeah, it's also weird, too, that I would have almost rather seen, like, Nico or somebody show up in the preview because...
True.
Like, we know the other two Planeswalkers and... Well, actually, I guess there's technically two more, but, like, the two that were in the preview, like, we didn't gain anything from them being there. Like, you didn't fill in the world for us. Unless you're just a fan of Tybalt or a fan of Kaya, like, I don't think it really did anything for you.
I'm a fan of Kaya, and it really didn't do anything for her.
And it's tough, too, because, again, you know, we just went through a year of COVID. I don't know. Maybe the studio didn't have their full teams, or there was, you know, timelines and communication issues or whatever. So I'm willing to give people too much slack during the pandemic because I've seen behind the scenes just how much trouble people are having. Like, I get it. But it just felt very lackluster, especially to come out like right as the set releases. Actually, it's probably better that it did, honestly. And we had that first trailer floating around because that teaser I thought was better for selling the set than the actual trailer was.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Very, very weird. But anyway, getting past the trailer, how did you feel about the set so far, Brian? We've had a week now to kind of live with Kaldheim. Building some decks, kind of seeing what people are saying about it, playing with it some. What's your takeaway?
I'm enjoying the set. And like you mentioned, for the first time in a long time, we could say, hey, the power level seems to be like where it needs to be. Nothing came out. And just I'm seeing a million different decks on the ladder so far. So it's.
Yeah, I'm with you. So far, everything I've played has felt good. Even the decks that were clunky and didn't work, they were still fun.
Yeah.
You know, I'm running it, like you're saying, a bunch of different things on the ladder.
We got multiple tribes you can apparently run with, because the dwarf dragon thing, like you did a video about, that seems really fun. At some point, I am going to build that.
Yeah, that's a thing. We've seen elves be a thing. We're seeing big cards that are getting action, like Vorinclex. All the different sagas are starting to pop up here and there. I mean, giants, people are still I haven't seen a good giant deck yet, but people are getting close, it looks like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's starting to come together for some people. So yeah, I don't know. It seems like this, I don't know, maybe this was the palate cleanser we needed. You know, it's the only way I can describe it. Like maybe we were just so used to things being over the top and feeling awkward and oppressive and just like, you know, there were a lot of deck options, but you were still really like battling like two different decks for the most part all the time. But maybe we're moving past that a little bit. I don't know.
Hallelujah.
I looked at early tournament results and they're kind of all over the place, as to be expected. The thing I've been putting into a lot of videos though in this last week is I've been trying to remind people, don't take wins and losses you see for the first 2 weeks, especially right now, to heart. Right? Because the builds we're playing aren't refined yet. We're definitely not playing against refined builds. We're seeing all kinds of things being played. Even within each deck, we're seeing 20 builds within each deck or deck type. Like, it's going to take a few more weeks for the format to really narrow down, let a few more tournaments happen, let the best cards kind of start getting known a little bit, and then you can start trusting the results a little bit more. Now, the plus side, if you build something fun and interesting and it wins, cool, you can go buck wild right now. It's like the old West. Like, people are just bringing whatever revolver they got in their pocket to the fight. I mean, it feels like that, though. I mean, people are just bringing all kinds of stuff. And I prefer it. I love playing Magic right now. And, you know, have people watching me, and I'm going, y'all, I literally don't know what card my opponent's going to play next.
And that's a great feeling.
Yeah, I've literally been sitting there, like, frozen for a decision, because I'm like, I sort of want to do action A, but if they have one of these 15 cards, this sucks. But if I do action B, if they have one of these 10 or 12 cards, this sucks. And I'm just like, well, here we go. And hope for the best, right? But to me, that makes for more entertaining streams to watch. And watching people go through the deck building discovery process and try different cards. As a matter of fact, I played a mono green deck that Rumpty's been playing. By the way, if y'all don't follow him, he's a good follow if you like watching mono green stuff. He streams a few times a week on Twitch. It's Rumti. And last night, Rumpty was basically taking it and saying, okay, what if I turn this into a snow-based deck? Like, let me try to fit different cards in here, or whatever. And he kind of came to the same conclusion I did, that the four mana bear or whatever, the snow bear, is actually a decent card. So even though he may not play a full snow version, he might still find a way to squeeze in two of the snow bears, because it turns out they're actually okay, right? So people are doing this level of discovery, and he's doing that even at Mythic, right? So he doesn't even know the final version he wants to play yet, and that's a deck he's played for months and months on end, for almost two whole seasons. So that's kind of what I'm telling people. Like, we're all over the place right now, but that's a good thing. Like, we're having a good time with it. People are enjoying different things again. I'm seeing a lot of creative decks on different streams. I'm seeing people post a lot of stuff on Twitter. Like, I don't know. I don't want to talk too soon, because again, like, the tournament scene might, I mean, we might get some results and, you know, we might be back to where we were in 3 weeks. But at least right now, I'll tentatively say the community feels a little reinvigorated, I guess.
So far, nothing seems like, at least, you know, Omnath or Oko bad. So that's a huge step in the right direction. That's the first set in a minute where we have it.
The only card that's really created any frustration, I think, is Tybalt's Trickery.
Yeah, and like you were saying, that has to, so many things have to line up.
Yeah, it's got a few failed cases, which keep it from being degenerate. it also has kind of spawned people playing other cards to deal with their answers anyway. So you're seeing a lot of people that are playing black or playing like Soul Scour, I believe is the card. It's a 3-mana instant. Your target player sacrifices an enchantment or creature with like the highest cost, I think is what it is. So if they go and they get like Asika and play the backside and get the Prismatic Bridge, you can make them sacrifice it. You know, if they get some dumb big creature, you can make them sacrifice it. They're also playing some more things. As you're starting to see, like Murderous Rider, I'm seeing show up in a few more lists because it destroys Planeswalkers. It's like people are starting to adapt. You know, I think the first couple times you see it, especially if you don't know about it, it's kind of like, what the hell is this, right? You know, like, my opponent got, like, a turn to Ugin or a turn to Prismatic Bridge. Like, how do I beat that, right? Especially if you're on the draw, because you're like, I have one land. I'm in, like, a 1/1 creature. Like, what do I do? And that feels bad. And that's my biggest issue. I think, other than the deck, I don't think it's going to be a top tournament killer or anything. But I do think it's bad for the format in the sense that it really pushes down on the worst players in the format, right? And what I'm saying is, like, I'm trying to think of an analogy that works. It's like if you're sitting at a poker table and you have the fish at the table, right? The guy's got more money than sense, and you don't want that guy to go away from the table. But you have one of the players at the table that's just constantly telling him how bad he is and all the dumb plays that he's making and, you know, how he got lucky and caught a card to beat him or whatever, right? That's what the Tybalt deck feels like, right? It doesn't matter to everybody else that's at the table and experienced or whatever, but it feels really bad for that casual to mid-level player.
Yeah.
Like, that's my problem with it, because whether people like it or not, the most enfranchised players, we actually don't matter all that much. I mean, nobody wants to hear that, but let's be honest about it. Like, in anything, not just Magic. Like, because we're going to be here.
Yeah, we've literally made Magic cards out. Where are we going to go?
Yeah, like, we are going to be here. Same thing with the poker players, right? They're going to be there. The problem is you need those lower to mid-level players that maybe occasionally get lucky. They spike an FNM or they win a $1,000 tournament or whatever, right? You need them to be there to build up sales, to build up the prize pools, to do other stuff. So anything that significantly harms their level of fun, entertainment, whatever, I think we do have to keep an eye on. Just, you know, it could have long-term effects. Now, that being said, I have considered doing something crazy with Tybalt's Trickery. I thought about just playing it straight up as a counterspell, the way it was probably intended to be used, in my red-based aggro decks. Mostly because my thought is, if, let's say it's turn 4 or 5, I'm attacking, my opponent decides they want to, I don't know, Doom Scour or Shatter the Sky, whatever their choice of sweeper is. Well, if you counter it, the odds of them hitting another copy is pretty low. And that's usually the only card that's going to wreck you at that point, right? So if you counter it, you don't care if they get something that draws 2 cards or whatever instead. You get to keep your, like, 3 or 4 creatures. Seems like a reasonable play.
And I mean, red having counter spells seems that that could be interesting.
Yeah, I'm theorizing it. I don't know how good it really is, but it's a thought. I don't know if I'd use it against creature decks. Like, you know, because you're like, all right, I'm going to counter that. And you're like, oh, you got another big dumb creature. Congratulations, right? Like, you don't want that. But I don't know. It's something to think about. But yeah, overall, I think Kaldheim's been fun. I think people are interested in it. I think we're enjoying it. I appreciate, though, like early on, I think people were interested because of the marketing and the flavor. And I think now people are interested because of what the cards are actually doing. And that actually feels really good. It's not just people being bought in because they like the idea of it. We're now kind of buying in because of the practicality and the realism of it. And I like that. But that being said, Brian, let's talk a little bit about Black History Month. And this is something, and I don't even know your opinion on this, actually, so this would be a good conversation. But obviously, you know, Black History Month, the calendar flips to February 1st. and you instantly start seeing stuff about, like, you know, this black person creator, this is a person in our company that does a good thing, you know, whatever. Like, for some reason, we wait till February to start celebrating people. But that's a whole different point. How do you feel when, I guess let's focus on the game industry. Like, how do you feel when you start seeing that stuff show up in different places in the game industry in the month of February?
As you mentioned, it's frustrating to know you're not going to see it again, you know, for a year. That's often one of the first things I think of.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, too. You know, I feel like...
But, I mean, I do appreciate that it is acknowledged that, hey, as a game company, or really just most companies, they realize it is a thing you have to do something for.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, right? And that's where I get kind of caught up, because I appreciate they're doing it. They're like, hey, you're at least recognizing that, hey, there's a shortcoming in these people or projects or whatever being promoted, and you're trying to fill that space. But the other part of it is, like, are you doing it because you believe that, or are you doing it because you feel you have to?
I will also warn people, you know, like, hey, please prepare whatever your project is. Because I remember when I was in the newspaper industry, you know, they would wait till the last minute, first of all, to decide if they were doing something. You know, like, I was working for a paper that basically, for a city that basically, it's primarily a white flight community, has virtually no black people. The editor didn't realize this until he said, hey, we're doing a Black History series of profiles. And at one point it got so bad, I was profiling the starting running back on the local high school football team, who wasn't even particularly good. This happened to be the only black person they could find at the high school.
Damn, that's cold.
Yeah. He felt awkward. I felt awkward. You know, but we both did our job.
I'm this poor kid. I'm like, Imagine being like the third string running back.
Right.
And some dude from a local paper is like, hey, man, you want to do an interview for the paper? And you're kind of like, well, yeah, I guess. But why?
You know, like, it's like week 10 of the season. He's got 200 yards total. I mean, it's just,
that's what I'm saying. Like, this has got to be such a weird thing. Yeah, I don't know. In the game industry, it's awkward, right? Because we already have a really just a large lack of black representation in gaming, whether you're talking about video games or board games or whatever. And I have seen a couple of sites that they try to compile, like, all the black board game creators and everything else or whatever. And that's not a Black History Month. That's just a thing they just do, which is kind of cool. So props to that. But it's interesting, you know, when you see how often it's like, okay, it's cool that you're talking about these people, and it's sure cool that you're lifting them up. But when are you, like we talked about earlier, you know, when are you going to put more of them in your games?
Yeah.
When are you going to put more of them on the covers? Like, when are you going to have that person be the lead on one of your game projects? You know, I think that's kind of part of the problem. It's like, it's, and again, I think that comes back to, it's cool to say you're welcome here and we appreciate you being here, but, like, what are you doing to actively involve them and invite them to the process?
I just talked about a YouTube channel about how Overwatch, for example, is in many ways a very inclusive game, but 30 some odd characters out still doesn't have a black female playable character.
Yeah, exactly. So then it feels a little hollow when at some point during the month, if they decide to say, hey, this is one of our black female employees, you know, I don't know, here's her birthday, her favorite food, whatever it is, you know, they do, because people do different things.
And they also just said, you know, hey, like, the AFL-CIO asked, hey, look, are you going to, you know, implement some form of the Rooney Rule where you have to interview at least one person of color for an aggravating basis? No, not going to do it. Have no plans to do anything like that.
I think that's a good idea. Like, if you're saying, we want to increase it. Because honestly, because here's the thing. If you at least bring people in, and at the end of the day, you still say, yeah, but I'm still not sure this other person is a fit, we're going to go with this other person. Fine. You at least gave someone the opportunity to impress you. I mean, we just now, like 2 weeks ago, just got announced that we have our first Muslim coach in the NFL. And we've had tons of Muslim football players.
Absolutely.
But this is the first Muslim coach. I mean, think about how hard that is.
Yeah.
In the game industry. And you're talking about a field where there have been several that were qualified because they grew up playing the sport, played it professionally, whatever, and still had never had a job. So whenever people talk about their representation not being a thing, I'm like, think about that. You know, the Rooney Rule was instituted because you kept having all these white coaches get things and get these positions, and the black coaches weren't even being considered.
Eric Bieniemy, you know, has built one of the best offenses in football history. Can't get a head coaching job.
Yeah.
Not just the best offense in the league. Now the Chiefs are beating people like they're playing Madden.
And that's the thing, too. When people say, oh, well, there's not enough qualified folks. Like, when you're looking at the NFL level, you're literally talking about people who their whole life has been football.
Yeah.
And they
Eric Bieniemy is by far the most qualified guy, and people are hiring college coaches.
Hell, they're hiring coaches.
Never coached a down in pro football.
They're hiring coaches that have already failed twice as coaches elsewhere.
Right.
I mean, and the same thing happens in the game industry. Like, we see people who have failed games or have failed projects or worked for one company and couldn't hack it or whatever, and then they go somewhere else and immediately get hired. But you have,
or you know, they're chased out because of some kind of Me Too sexual harassment scandal, but still fire work elsewhere.
That's a thing that's happening too. You are very, very right.
Because we're watching Ubisoft, you know, see where these people land. Riot Games, same thing. We're okay. Yeah, they can't work there anymore. But you know, when the heat goes down, we're gonna see some of these people resurface.
Yeah, and that, I think that's the complaint, right? When you say, well, there's not enough qualified people. I'm like, are you sure? There's got to be somebody that doesn't come with the baggage this other person comes with.
Yeah. It's got to at least be somebody that's not a serial sexual harasser.
Yep.
And I will say this too. We need to consider things like that to be qualifications. You know?
Let me say this too. If you are interested in a job in the game industry and you go down their list of wants or whatever, and you think, well, I only hit like 60, 70% of the things they want. Apply anyway, because other people are going to be doing it that are less qualified than you. And I know that from experience. Like, don't say like, well, they kind of said they also want somebody who, I don't know, who's done like copy editing. And I've not done that. I've just written for a thing before. Whatever. Apply. You don't have the one thing. Great. You're probably still more qualified than the other people they're going to be looking at. And if you don't get it, you don't get it. But don't take what little opportunity you might have off your plate. You know, like, get in there and put your hat in the ring. You know, because you're not going to find out any other way. And the worst thing that happens, they say no. You took 35, 45 minutes to change up your resume and application and submit it. If it doesn't happen, doesn't happen. But there's a lot of opportunities still out there. Yeah, and I will say this. I do genuinely believe that there are some companies really trying to make a change, and they're really trying to be better about it. And I think over the last 2-3 years, people have even seen how much it matters. That you can get a lot of easy free press right now if your thing has some decent amount of representation. Like we're saying with this World's Fair game, right? Like, we want to buy it just because of that. Because we know there's not going to be another game, or not more than maybe one more throughout the year, that's going to have quality, heavy representation in a historically relevant game, especially talking about like achievements, inventions, whatever. So you kind of got to do it because there ain't that many. So yeah, like we know it's important. We know it's a thing. I get it, right? It's just tough. Like I said, when you sit and you see it and it's like, okay, well, let me see what else this company's doing. Is it just lip service? Or, you know, is this somebody who's actually been a lifer at their company? Are they really trying to do outreach? Because really, and this is the hard part too. I think it comes back to people asking like, well, why does it have to be just a month or whatever? Like, it doesn't. But I get it. It's just the society we've built up until there's more normalcy around all this, like there's, it's still going to just be a thing. But anytime we can get FaceTime for some of these people, it's cool. I don't want to discourage people from doing it, but at the same time, it's like, let's really show us where they've been involved in something. Show us where they have gotten to be the lead, you know, where their decisions or their impact has been felt. Because otherwise you're saying like, well, look, we hired somebody. You know what I mean? Like, all right, are we good now? You know, it's like, oh, wait, we hired a gay person. Is that good enough?
Yeah, right. You good? You threw up. We're great. Hey, can we go back to hiring white people now?
Y'all said we didn't hire enough women. We hired three. Is that good enough? It's sort of what it feels like sometimes. And it should just be part of the culture. And that's what I'm saying. It becomes part of the culture once you start seeing those people in position, making decisions, being part of teams. Like, that's what I'd like to see more of. If you show me like, hey, this is a person who's been here for 5-6 years. They're going to be the lead on a project that's going to come out in like October. And we can start amping up a thing for them right now for a release that's coming later this year. And you know it's got this lead person on it. Awesome. That'd be the best way to use your Black History Month promotion. So now you're hyping up a product. You're getting somebody's name out there. You're showing how like important the person is to your company. Like, you're checking a lot of boxes off. As opposed to just like, hey, here's somebody that's here. You know, we want to show them off because of Black History Month. Because then you're almost making the person like a showpiece with nothing to show for it at the end. And it's just kind of weird. And I'll even tell you, I've had people reach out to me in the last few days because of Black History Month. Because they're like, well, you know, blah, blah. And I'm kind of like, okay, well, where were you like a few months ago? Like, why magically now? You're like, well, let me see if I could do a promotion with a Black person. Because now it just feels weird. And I can't, you know, get me wrong, I'd like the money. But it feels weird.
Yeah.
And I know they mean well. That's the worst part. I don't think anybody's doing any of this intentionally. I don't think it's like, you know, trying to make themselves feel better. I just think it's just, all right, it's Black History Month. Let me see if I can find a Black person to do a promotion with. And I get it. It's better than nothing. You know, I'm not going to sit and complain about the person. It just feels bad. Especially when I know I've had better opportunities for some of these people to work with me in the past, right? Like, you're going to get less for your money or effort out of this, but okay. Like, it's kind of a weird thing. So yeah, it's a thing. I don't think it's a bad thing overall, though. I just think people need to be more aware of what they're putting out there, I think. Anytime you're trying, and I don't think it's just Black people. I think anytime you're trying to include any minority group of any kind, I think you need to just be aware of what it can look like. What are the optics around it? And again, show how that person is part of your community. How you are benefiting them and how they are benefiting you. Other than just saying, here's the person, right? Or here's the one effort we donated to, or whatever. It's like, okay, if you show that, it's like, hey, we recently donated here, but it's part of our total philanthropic efforts to do these things. And it's like, okay, cool. Now we can get behind you and say, okay, you're trying to do all this for your communities. That's awesome.
And okay, it is important to say why you're doing it, because there were so many video game companies that, you know, that donated and mentioned Black Lives Matter after George Floyd got killed, but nobody said why they were doing it. There were so many just generic statements that didn't mention George Floyd, didn't mention police brutality. They just threw Black Lives Matter out there and didn't have the guts to say why it was suddenly more important to them.
That's true. And that's why I think I called it out. This is probably like 20 episodes ago or whatever, about Games Workshop, where they didn't even really go heavy on the George Floyd thing. They just basically said outright, look, we know we have a lot of idiots in our community and we ain't going to stand for it. Like, this is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. If you got a problem with it, we don't even want to see you at our tables. And that's basically what their statement said in those words. And I was like, cool, I can get behind this. They're not even trying to make a showpiece out of it. They're saying straight up, this behavior is wrong. If you think it's right, we don't want to see you again. Like, that's how a statement should be done.
Yeah.
And I was shocked, honestly, to see it from Games Workshop of all companies. But they outright just said, cool, if this is how you feel, we ain't going to miss you. And that, to me, was better than anything about, well, in light of recent events, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like, this is just like, we see everything going on. We see how some of y'all are acting. We're going to cut this crap out. Like, straight and to the point. So I feel you when you're talking about people who are just, well, we're donating, or we're doing this thing. It's like, okay, but what's your follow-up action? Right? Like, how are you using this as an opportunity to educate people? Or in some way fix things other than throwing money at the problem and then turning around? Like, that, I think that gets caught up in that too. I think that's a good thing to bring up, dude. But all right. I think that's going to do it for us, Brian. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media when you're not doing the show?
All right. I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. Our family channel on YouTube is Alan's Ever After.
And as always, you can find me at Power Dragon, PowerDragn. And newly, you can find me on Facebook, streaming during the weekdays in the mornings on the Pacific. So feel free to stop by, say hi, follow me around, see my YouTube videos. And as always, got to tell you, wherever you're listening, whenever you're listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And while we're still trying to get vaccinated out here, please remember to wear your mask, wash your hands, stay away from other humans, because everyone's icky with the COVID. And let's get back to gaming and gathering sooner rather than later.
If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us on our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate. Other patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at colorofmtg. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.